SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219 XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online, as one does, and at our website too, stevebick.com. Moving closer and closer to, I dare I say a firm turf course. I don't think that's the case, but only one race off the turf today as we look toward this carryover sequence in New York. The sixth race, you can take that off the turf. But the good news is the eighth and the ninth and the fourth, for those of you going to play the pick six. And it's not easy. We didn't get a chance to, Andy didn't get a chance to talk to Andy yesterday. He was at the dentist. But it is a very tricky sequence. Starts with a maiden 50 and ends with a state-bred maiden 40 on the grass. Big, bulky field. And I think even that sixth race off the turf today, I think that is going to hold together pretty good. You got three MTOs, including 2-1 Linda Rice on the outside, five-star bunt. You've also got Chris Engelhardt with a 7-2 shot and a 4-1 shot as well for Bruce Brown. And so the MTOs will be a big part of it. And there's a few that seem likely to stay around and stay in that sixth race. So not an easy sequence. I went through it last night and I kind of intimidated me, frankly. So we'll get some opinions from Seth Merrow in hour three. We are looking to connect with Byron King as well from the Daily Racing Form because the Keeneland action, of course, resumes. Had a little Keeneland discussion with Jeremy. You might have been, if you're sticking with us right off of the replay, you were just listening to Jeremy. And the Keeneland racing today, no stake today. The stakes pick up tomorrow with the Sycamore and then the Valley View on Friday. So I'd love to get some Byron King thoughts. And then from Byron, the other topic, happened to see quite a bit of movement on his watch list and his contender grid for the Filly and Mare turf. And, of course, we hope to get the Steve Anderson visit in as well to get more of the Euros. The European invasion for the Filly and Mare turf obviously centers on the Prix d'Opera winner, Wild Illusion, Gosden with Coronet, O'Brien with Magic Wand. The name that bubbled to the surface, a couple of names that popped up on contender watch, Homeric, who was third in the Prix d'Opera, and also placed behind Lawrence, waiting for some movement on Lawrence toward either the Filly and Mare or the Mile. Marcus, I think, leaning, he thinks she'll go in the Mile. But we also saw Princess Yaza turn up, Gavin Cromwell's filly, and she comes out of the win in the Prix de Royleu. Mile and a half, and so she fits. And then, of course, Dermot Weld has been intended for this with Zira, and she's had a classy season. And then, of course, the domestic horses, there's Chad Brown, and there's been some movement with some of Chad's, too, because right now, Four-Star Crook and Sister Charlie appear to be the two that Chad has got focused on the filly and mare turf. You also, we know from the conversation with Joe Sharp, Moms on Strike, he wants to get in. And then, interestingly, Roger Varian now showing interest with the E.P. Taylor winner, Sheikh Arika. So there was quite a bit, a couple of new names with Homeric and Princess Yeza and Paved also. Michael McCarthy. McCarthy's bringing a loaded wagon to Churchill. And Paved ran very well. That was a very encouraging performance in the Rodeo Drive. And on that topic, Basilica not now going forward either. Basilica off the watch list. So we could ideally get a couple of conversation points in with Byron King about Keeneland and his division in the Cup, the filly and mare turf. There's also, by the way, I'm going to mention, there is a South American, the Peruvian Win and You're In horse, Smart Choice, and her name hadn't come up. She's been on the likely list, but she's now with Todd Pletcher, Todd Trainier. Smart Choice. She won the Gran Premio Pamplona. So the filly and mare turf is going to come up with a full field. There was also a little bit of, it seems like some liens are becoming a little clearer. We had that discussion with John White yesterday, and John helping us get a little bit of a pecking order in terms of favoritism and the price structure. Well, in the sprint, and of course the sprint will be heavily influenced by the decisions of the cross entrance. There's going to be most likely two cross entrants. Promises Fulfilled, absolutely. That's already been established by Dale Romans, is going to cross enter. Then in terms of tipping the scales, I don't know. I don't know how he's going to weigh that decision. I mean, one of the things that we discussed yesterday with John is that it does feel like there's no shortage of speed, and maybe from that standpoint, Promises Fulfilled better off, trying the dirt mile. But he's got plenty to face off there. So I don't know. I don't know how Dale, as you'll recall from last week, Dale's taking suggestions, but the liens, Whitmore and Limousine Liberal, both seemingly more sprint destined than dirt mile. So, and there has been a couple of other names that popped up in the most recent revision in contact with all the connections. This is why the DRF staff invaluable, and that includes horses like Nice Not Nice for Buff Bradley, and we knew Seven Trumpets because Dale said he was going to run Seven Trumpets. Lone Sailor is now under consideration for the Dirt Mile or the Classic by Tom Amos. Tom happy coming out of the Derby win. Awesome Slew, Giant Expectations. I don't know if you noticed, if you haven't seen this, Battle of Midway with a bullet performance. Yeah, Battle of Midway, it may be taking a little bit longer than expected for Battle of Midway to find form. I mean, you cover mares and he's out of good shape and everything. And, of course, there's really two horses. Rainbow Air is doing the same thing, of course, coming back and having had the shed experience, and you know, now is going to try to add to his reputation with a Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint try. But Battle of Midway, 59-4. That was on Sunday. I was catching up on XBTV. Just XBTV has been invaluable. That work, you know, a couple of ticks faster than the minute and a fifth a week earlier. Battle of Midway. This will be one of those. It's not exactly a De Haas situation, but it is interesting. I think he's going to end up being overlooked and potentially underappreciated. So, just a cautionary note. And you may recall he did run pretty well last year at Churchill Downs. He was third in the Derby, for those that forget. Yeah, he was third in the Derby. I know. It seems like a million years ago, right? Yeah, I think he might be rounding into form. And on the Hollendorfer front, by the way, since that came up, or somewhat, I see that dueling is now under consideration for the juvenile. That's the Michael Stinson violence colt that won well. And I know that Tom McGreevy is very high on him. Thinks he's going to be a serious horse. And they're potentially throwing their hat into the juvenile, dueling. So add him to your list. Every morning I comb the internet trying to be ahead of this. And DRF, I believe either today or tomorrow will update. I'll check later, but I got word that they will refresh the PPs, the contender PPs. So, let me pull up a case and go ahead and play the music out, because Dr. Alday's calling me. I'm hoping to get Steve on here. Pete Fornatel's going to join us momentarily. So, there you go. Sid Fernando, of course, as well. Seth Merrill and more. Stay with us. Back after this.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit DRF.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Talking away.
Back at the races, and I did get a chance to talk to Dr. Allday. He will join us. We've been really off since the summer with Horse Health Today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn, and a couple of topics, as always, ripped from today's headlines. Number one, the spate of incidents at Churchill, obviously, you know, it alarmed people. And in fact, John Sadler, a couple of weeks ago, you heard John, you know, mention that, you know, he's keeping an eye on that. And the KHRC, you know, they went over everything and are calling for all, you know, they call for all the appropriate reviews and extra, you know, the extra effort that every jurisdiction goes through when you get a spate of injuries and fatalities. And that's a cluster, essentially, as they call it in statistics. And sometimes it is something, sometimes it is something on the track. Other times it just is a cluster. I mean, those of you that play roulette, it's chaotic number theory. You may, you know, over 1,000 spins, all the numbers are essentially going to come up, you know, a certain, you know, basically the same amount of times. But over a run of 30 spins, you might get a repeater of one number four times. Chaotic number theory. And it's not, you know, obviously there's other factors when you deal with, you're dealing with a racetrack surface, and yeah, it can get hard. You get sinkholes, you get fissures in the base, that then create soft spots where horses will sink in. And that can, obviously all those things contribute. And so, you know, the appropriate actions. But a lot of times, and Nick Peterson, who's as important and as respected a surface analyst as there is, they say the track is as consistent as it possibly could be. So it may just simply be a cluster. I mean, to give you an example, at Ellis this summer, there was only one incident on the main track, but there were four on the turf. I mean, we had that at Saratoga one summer where three horses over like a 10-day period went wrong on the grass. I mean, it's random. It's great to be vigilant, and there are things, you know, when we had the situation about now, gosh, it's got to be 6 years ago at Aqueduct during the winter. There's things that, you know, measures that were put in that have had great long-term benefit, and they're talking about the same kinds of things at Kentucky, and it's basically the regulatory vets making, you know, double and triple sure as best they can that, you know, the pre-race examinations, you know, horses that may fall into a danger zone, and we know what that is after all this time. You know, remember that all of this information, you know, the injury database that it really is new. I mean, these kinds of stats and these kinds of careful monitoring, it didn't go on years ago. You know, now with the necropsies, every incident, you know, every fatality results in a full necropsy, so that going forward, regulatory vets and racetrack practitioners all have are armed with as much information as possible, because there wasn't, you know, it's really to the industry's credit, there wasn't the same concern and alarm and attention to this years ago. I mean, it's really only in the last really 10 years. So we'll touch on that with Dr. Alday. It's been a while since we've had that discussion about pre-race examination and what the regulatory vets do and how careful, attention can get, give the horses that might be in that, you know, in that danger zone, set off an alarm. I've been saving, knowing that I wanted to get Dr. Alday this week, I really had not mentioned the passing of Dr. Phelan and Edward Hagyard Phelan died on Friday, 87, and one of those veterinary legends is an easy descriptive term. So, and Steve knew Dr. Phelan obviously for 40 years. So we'll have Steve tell you about Dr. Phelan as well. And there was one other thing I've been saving for Dr. Alday for Horse Health Today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn. Dan Ross, who of course has been on with us, Dan, a terrific investigative journalist, West Coast based, and his piece about 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago actually, 2 weeks ago today, Wednesday, October 3rd, if you did not see it in the Thoroughbred Daily News, cardiac death, sudden cardiac death in racehorses, what we know and what we still don't, and it really a nice survey of that landscape, which is a bit of a mystery. And of course, Dr. Alday and I have discussed it any number of times. It's one of the difficulties, and here again, not just the racing industry, but really all equine sport health monitoring has been going out of their way to figure out, you know, the potential structural issues and you know, again, danger zones for cardiac issues in horses. And it's very tricky, very hard to read and project because you're not taking cholesterol readings. There's no blocked arteries. They don't. That's not so, and that's why the term heart attack really doesn't apply to horses, as Dr. Alday has taught you over the years. So, if you haven't seen that piece, and Dan Ross does terrific work. And this one, he shows up all over the place. ThoroughbredRacing.com and TDN, and I mean, he's one of those freelance magicians. He turns up everywhere, Dan Ross. So, and follow him on Twitter. I don't think he tweets a lot. He's very good friends with Zoe Kadnan. That's how we came to know Dan Ross, through Zoe. Pete Fornatel is standing by patiently and listening listening to me drone on. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Whatever. I'm going to listen later on the podcast over at SteveBick.com, or I listen now. It's good. You're saving me. You're getting ahead on my listening. So it's a beautiful thing. I never mind being on hold listening to you do your thing, Steve. And it's great to be here on this fine morning in Brooklyn.
Well, speaking of listening to people, I've been listening for 72 hours to Tommy Masses, who on every platform in media, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, where else, he's everywhere, yapping off. I love how he retweets or is reposting every single reference to himself.
Good for him.
And his win at Keeneland. The master of the Keeneland contest does it again. The amazing Tommy Masses.
It's fantastic. I'm not even joking when I tell you that as you were saying that, he just texted me. We were set to talk because I'm writing a piece about this amazing thing that happened in contest this weekend that some players may not be aware of. We had the three important contests, the two at Keeneland and the one at three important on-sites, I should say. Don't want to denigrate the online contest out there, but the two at Keeneland and the one at the Orleans in Vegas, all won by professional horse players. Sean Borman, 38-year-old professional in Lexington, Kentucky, gets the job done on Saturday. Tommy, of course, winning his third contest at Keeneland, I think sitting in the same Carroll in the green room, wearing the same T-shirt, the Tulane shirt, gets it done. And then out in Vegas Saturday night, Duke Matisse, with a Precious Passion-like performance, just bombing out the field on day two with a historic run, and then going into defense mode on day three, just playing long shots to protect anybody else hitting them. I don't even know if he cashed on day three. It did not matter. No, they didn't even get close to Duke. So all three of those pros hitting for nice scores this weekend, and it's a fun story to write. I'm sort of, I'm writing one piece a week these days for DRF, so I'm trying to find a clever way to combine those three stories into one. Had the pleasure of interviewing Duke at length yesterday, going to be posting that as an episode of the DRF Players Podcast next week. Got off the phone with Sean this morning, so Tommy and I have been going back and forth. But yeah, he deserves it. He is somebody who I respect. Rich Nilsson called him the best live bank player, or said he had the best resume. Garrett Skiba might object to that, as well as the guy with the tail might have some claim in there too. But there's no doubt that Tommy should be on anybody's short list of the best players. This is his fourth outright win in a major, the three at Keeneland, including the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, and also he had a win when he was chasing the tour, trying to chase down that loose leader, Jonathan Kinchin, back in 15, and he went out to Del Mar and won the fall contest there. The contest world is better with Tommy Masses out of his semi-retirement that he went into in 16 and 17. And hopefully this big win means we'll see more of him there. It's already a legendary story when he had the 1,000 on the 19-1 shot that propelled him to the lead, apparently in the green room at Keeneland, banging the carol and saying, "Ladies and gentlemen, we have a new leader." One of the great roots in green room history. So it's very, very good stuff.
Unbelievable. Duke, it's funny. The minute Duke went out on day one on Thursday, I said to myself, well, some teams are designed to play from behind, and other teams can do a big job playing well from in front. And Duke, once he generally puts himself in that position, defends the house.
It's going to be very hard to run down. It reminded me a little bit of when Paul and Duke made their big run at the NHC the other year, and Paul sees the lead at the final table. You know, I mean, these are professional players who really understand the game theory of everything. So they're not just, it's almost like a jockey cleverly riding another horse during the race. They're going to put themselves in a position to win, not just with the horses that they're going to come up with, but by thinking about how who everybody else is going to play, and blocking in the right spots and covering the right spots. There was definitely, he was always definitely going to be with that kind of lead that started going into effect about halfway through the second day of the 3-day mythical event. I think he hit 7 of his first 9 bets. It was a tour de force performance, and I just think it's so interesting because Duke and Paul, they're so different than the typical advantage player, professional player types in tournaments, many of whom want to bet on as few races as possible, which is logical. There's nothing wrong with that advantage player type approach to find a race or two you can crack, bet it aggressively. But because they're playing so many tracks every day of their lives, and because they're such true horse players who enjoy handicapping and have set up a system of data where they're able to look at multiple tracks at once, you know, give them the NHC, give them the Vegas format. Not that they won't do well in live bankroll. They've had plenty of success there too. But give them the Vegas format where everybody has to make all these bets looking at so much stuff, and they've just got a huge advantage as their record shows. They're just more equipped to look at so many races, and they're two of the sharpest guys around, and it's always great to see Duke's name at the top of the leaderboard.
Well, speaking of top of the leaderboard, and one of the fun additions to the contest landscape over the last several years, Tommy Massis, and too good of an opportunity not to bring Tommy on with Pete. Tommy, how did you do Sunday at Keeneland? I didn't see.
The Who Wants to Be a Millionaire show?
Yes.
Well, I've seen it.
In the fourth race of 13, I asked, you know, that was the audience pick. he was scratched. 50-50 was in the second. Well, half the race came off the turf, including him. And then I called a friend, and Carmen Miranda went dancing down the stretch, going boom, chicka, boom, boom, chicka, boom.
Oh, tremendous.
That's the last time I call that jockey Carmen Miranda, by the way.
I was going to say, not very gracious in victory.
No, listen, we have a guy who's since passed away in Toronto would give everyone names, you know what I mean? Like Steve Ammunition and, you know.
Some of them even repeatable.
Yeah, I was just going to say one that's not nice and the guy's still training, you know, like, it has nothing to do with them, it's just he just makes up these names, and so, nothing mean-spirited, just the guy's playing the name.
Sure, we get that with Gary Young. Gary's got the monikers for riders, for owners, for trainers. Tommy, it is funny, you know. Not only is there your repeated success at Keeneland, you know, Nick Tamaro has the same kind of success at Hawthorne. He goes up to Chicago and qualifies there, I think, 3 years in a row now. There's a certain, whether it's the time of year and knowing the races and understanding, you know, what's going to be involved. It is funny how certain contest players go and seem to have repeated success in certain scenarios.
Yeah, you know what? Nick Tamaro, if there wasn't the online contest, Nick Tamaro would win every tour. He's like the Tom Kite of horse racing. You know, a light ankle. It's always Nick Tamaro's there, or, you know, Nick Tamaro's there later. You know, it's always his name is some. I told him, I go, I can, you know, teach you the killer instinct, give you the, you know, but I think he's like, you know, I think he's one of the greatest players on the tournament. And I think he's just missing the killer instinct, but every tournament there's Nick Tamaro, Nick Tamaro, Nick Tamaro. The most consistent guy around.
You've carved out your niche as well, and you know, the interesting element of Sunday, you mentioned the off the turf, and there had to be some, you know, some muttering and a little bit of consternation, knowing that, you know, because the card was a modest card to begin with, so, you know, to then have it you know, carved up by off the turf, that takes a little bit of the, you know, a little bit of the excitement out, but you still made the most of it.
Yeah, no, I wanted it to come off the turf early because I struggle with turf races, especially at Keeneland. And the horse I like, the race I caught was, I was the 13 horse was 2,000 to win. You know, he didn't draw in, and then, you know, my second bet was a horse in the second race on the turf, which I didn't really want to bet. He was out of class, and, you know, it was just like I couldn't find anything. And I honestly, I phoned a friend of mine, Bobby Bucchino. I don't know if you guys know Bobby Bucchino. But Bobby always phones me, what do you like, what do you like, what do you like? And I'll give him a 10-1. He'll say, well, what about that horse in that race? He's always giving me a 6-5, right?
Right.
I go, you know, stop. I go, stop. And then he phones me that day, if I like anything at Woodbine. I go, listen, you handicap Keeneland? He goes, no. I go, why don't you find me a horse there? You know, I was being facetious. He called me 2 minutes later, and he goes, what about that horse in the fourth race, right? And he goes, I go, what do you like about him? He goes, well, the trainer wins second time out, 30%. I go, but that's like 3 races out of 10. And then I forget about it, and I'm looking through the first few races, I see that trainer in the first and third race had horses who broke their maiden with that same kind of angle. You know, had one race, gave them a race, second time out, boom. And there it was. That was it.
Unbelievable. The trainer.
I got
a question
for you, yeah. Tommy. Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
Larry Demerit, who, you know, does a great job, and this was a Temple City filly, and that alone made it a little tricky, just because, you know, you think of the Temple City as a turf stallion, but Bella Noir 19-1.
Yeah, believe me, I didn't have an opinion. If Jim Goodman would have offered me $2,700 back, I would have took it and went home. No, it just, I wasn't feeling good. The rain kills me, you know. So I'm not going to say, you know, I loved nothing. I loved the horse in the fourth that got didn't get in, and that was it. Like, you know, what am I going to bet all day? Steve Ashmanson and Brad Cox, those are the strong opinions I had, and, you know, I can't do nothing with those prices unless, you know, there was pick fours involved. Not that I would want them with them because, you know, they won one each, I think, but I liked all their horses that day.
Interesting.
I want to hear the story, Tommy. Of I've heard three people have told me the story of what you said as your 19-1 shot hit the finish line there. But the wording has been slightly different in each one. I want to record it for posterity in the pages of Daily Racing Form.
The first thing I said was, "Open them up, Carmen. Open them up, Carmen."
We'll leave that part out of DRF. Well, how about but when you got to the line?
I said, we have a new leader, or you have a new leader. That's all I said.
No, ladies and gentlemen, but that was the other question. I've heard it as...
Oh, maybe. I don't know. A friend of mine always says that to me when we play gin, and he takes the lead on me, right? It just came to my head. We have a new leader.
That's great, great.
You know, you know what? It's something scary about me in Lexington, whether I win a contest or not. I just, you know, it's Woodbine, I win. I do my work. No one knows more about Woodbine than I do. But when I go into, you know, play Keeneland, it's picking up the form the night before, and I'm just unconscious in that place. It's just scary. Something about Lexington, I don't know what it is. I think it's, I get there, I relax. I love everything about Lexington than the food. You know, except the food. We, in Toronto, I've had better food in prison than in Lexington.
You're going to the wrong places, my friend. There's some good places to eat down there. And you know what a snob I am about this stuff.
Well, I'm just saying, I'm spoiled in Toronto, you know, so. And I'm sure if you came to Toronto and you walked into the wrong places, you know, once a year, you'd say it's the worst place to eat, too, but. You know, just every place that's okay in Lexington is 10 times better. I'm serious. I have better food in prison than most.
We've got to ask about the sweatshirt at some point. The sweatshirt's got to come into play.
What do you mean? What sweatshirt? You lost me.
Your Tulane? Isn't that Tulane sweatshirt? The same one you were wearing for your other Tulane
Keeneland? It's a t-shirt.
Okay. Well, yeah, is it not the same garment?
That's karma, right? That's karma. I think me rescuing cats has changed my life with karma. But my friend of mine goes, let's go somewhere and play horses for a vacation. And this was right after New Orleans was recovering. You know, they weren't even, you know, like, some of the streets were still screwed. Some of the hotels were still flooded. And I go, I'm going to myself, let me go to New Orleans, you know, just, you know, go someplace I've always wanted to go, and we help them out. And I bought that T-shirt there, and I had to search and search to find a Tulane T-shirt in New Orleans. I'm not kidding you. They had LSU everywhere, West Lafayette, North Lafayette, East Lafayette. And then I said, isn't Tulane down the road? They go, yeah. I go, what? You know, I couldn't get to Tulane. It was one of the things that was, like, flooded around there, right? You know, all those gift shops, you know, Bourbon Street. One guy found one in the back room, right? And he goes, it's 3X, right? And he goes, are you 3X? I go, no, I'm 2X, but I'm moving that way, so I'll take it. And that's been my lucky T-shirt.
I love it. The green wave,
really,
baby.
It has been my lucky T-shirt, yeah? Yeah?
We love it.
That T-shirt ain't going nowhere, that's for sure.
Tommy, looking ahead toward Breeders' Cup, you got some early feel and some things you're tracking toward Cup?
Yeah, it looks good because I think the two horses I was really looking forward to were, Skitter Scatter and Sea of Stars, and they're both not running. So maybe we have to phone Bobby Bucchino again.
Bobby, the go-to. I love it. I love it. Tommy, I couldn't resist the opportunity. I know Pete's going to grill you later for full effect for a piece at DRF.
Yeah, you got to have me on one day, and I'll tell you about how I ended up in prison. That'll go viral, that show.
Well, that wasn't just
a metaphor when you were talking about prison?
No, I actually had to go to prison.
We'll save that for the NHC. We'll do one of our early morning. You come down early in the morning before things get rolling when I'm on the air, and we'll sit you down for that.
Perfect. That's a deal, Steve.
I love it. Tommy, okay. Thanks so much.
Okay, take it easy, guys. Bye.
Pete, there you go. I figured that was irresistible.
That was great. I think of my father, who once was on the air at WNEW-FM, and his friend Dennis Elsis brought John Lennon by. Me, I get Tommy Mathis. Not a bad trade. As big of a Lennon fan as I am, not a bad trade. Always enjoyable to get the surprise pop buys, especially from Tommy, who's become more than just one of the players I enjoy writing about, but a good friend who's taking good care of me, and he's not kidding. He's got some real hidden gem spots to hang in Toronto, and I've been happy to host him at the house with Susan and Perrin in Saratoga. He was showing Perrin how to use the one of those handheld racing games, trying to explain to her the pattern of who would win when, and sending her around to the other guests at the party to see if she could hustle them. She made like $80 in half an hour. It was pretty good. Tommy's looking out for other people.
Well, you can follow Tommy on Twitter. He's Tommy Hammer is his moniker, Tommy Massis. And there's the picture of him with the Michelle Ravencraft. And I love it with his Green Wave T-shirt. He's really not wrong. You see LSU everywhere down there. It's pretty funny.
Great stuff. That's one we'll be. I predict this will be a popular on-demand episode. Folks hear about the Tommy crashing the show. Always entertaining, and it'll be fun. It'll be great to have him. You know, he says what he says, but he'll have studied up, especially on his European tape for the Breeders' Cup, and we'll see. We'll see what he comes up with there and elsewhere. Good to have him back in action.
No doubt. Well, a couple of quick thoughts before Byron King joins us, Pete.
Oh, always good to hear. Always, Byron. Yeah, it was a big weekend on DRF tournaments. Lots of feeding action going on. One tournament I think folks are going to want to pay attention to on November 3rd, in conjunction with the Breeders' Cup, there's going to be a qualifier on DRF tournaments for the Pegasus World Cup Betting Championship. That's just one of the things going on there. Go to tournaments.drf.com and check out the whole roster of upcoming events, you know, Wednesday through Sunday, and then the holiday Mondays. You can find action no matter what your type of player you are, where you want to end up. You can try to win your way in on DRFT rather than just putting up your money and playing, though that's also a fine option too.
Well, Pete, a lot of fun. We'll be watching for your recap of the big weekend, including Dookie and Tommy. And obviously, the focus now starts to zero in on Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, and lots of, you know, lots of options for people to buy in and be involved. And still some qualifiers left, and we'll be that much closer when we talk next week.
Sounds great. Looking forward to it.
Pete Fornatel, everybody, looms boldly, and you know, back from London. How was the London Zoo? I guess we lost him. Yep, we'll find out about the zoo trip. He hung up. All right. We're going to take a break here then and come back with Byron King as promised. We'll talk a little Keeneland with BK and his Philly and Mare Turf Division coverage in the Daily Racing Forum. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Sid at about 10:15, and Dr. Stephen Allday, Horse Health Today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn, Seth Merrow, and more. Stay with us.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
The Breeders' Cup is just around the corner, and ExpressBet is your way to bet the top prep races from around the world. Santa Anita, Keeneland, Belmont, Woodbine, ExpressBet has them all. And not only can you get your bets in online or on your smartphone or tablet with ExpressBet, you can also watch the races from most tracks in crystal clear high definition. Ready to get started? Sign up for an ExpressBet account today to receive a $500 welcome bonus. That's $500 cash in your pocket that you can use to bet the Breeders' Cup. Visit ExpressBet.com to get started.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
388-4643. Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
About 10 to the top of the hour, Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale in a little bit, and then Dr. All Day. Horse Health Today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn. Haven't had a chance to talk to Doc in a couple of months, so we'll catch up on a bunch of topics. Right now, catching up with Byron King, who is keeping the irons hot in Keeneland, and also keeping tabs on the Filly and Mare Turf Division as part of the correspondent coverage. And that, of course, in the pages of the Daily Racing Form, America's Turf Authority since 1894. Byron, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. And about midway here through Keeneland, talked to Jeremy Plonk yesterday, and he's been tracking where the winners have been coming from. We'll see if we can't identify maybe a winner for the Sycamore and more in a minute. Let's first, though, zero in on the Breeders' Cup. And you're doing the Filly and Mare Turf, and there was a lot of movement. And I track the contender listings that you and the correspondents put out update weekly, and there was a lot of movement in the women's division this past week.
Yeah, we had, it's a different, just to backpedal just a little bit, it's this year, it's going back to a mile and three-eighths. In recent years, it has been shorter. It was originally, the race came on the scene, it was designed as a mile and a quarter race, but a lot of tracks, such as Churchill Downs, that have a 7-furlong turf course, are incapable of running it at that distance because it would start on the turn. So, Churchill this year, it's a mile and three-eighths. At Del Mar last year, it was a mile and an eighth. So it's quite a different race than last year. So I think what we're seeing in this year's field, as I've been tracking it, is some limited U.S. participation and a lot more European participation. In fact, I think the Europeans, as well as another one that was a winning year-end winner from Peru, will outnumber the Americans. Right now, the top American hopes are Sister Charlie and Four Star Crook for Chad Brown, both Grade 1 winners this year. They've been pretty elite performers at a mile and a quarter, that kind of distance. They'll be going a mile and three-eighths for the first time in a three-turn race, by the way. So beyond that, it's not a real deep American cast. Mom's on Strike. You had Joe Sharp on your show just a couple days ago. She's a long shot for the race, but she is a proven stayer. she's looking at it. And this year, and the focus of what I'll be writing about this week, I should say, is Paved. Paved, who was second in the Rodeo Drive, is now in the mix. She looks to be California's only representative in the race. She was fast closing second, a three-year-old filly, second to Vasilica in the Rodeo Drive, and Vasilica is passing the Breeders' Cup filly in Meriturf. She was not an original nominee, and she's staying put in California.
You know, you mentioned the configuration, and I'm glad you brought it up at Churchill. And this race, you know, which was the first of the races added to the Breeders' Cup from the original group. And if I'm not mistaken, there's been, what, four runnings at Churchill. And interestingly, Byron, the four winners have all come from four different places. Perfect Sherrill in 2011 from Woodbine. Shared Account came out of Belmont. Ouija Board came out of, I'm going to forget where Ouija Board ran previously. And Perfect Sting from Keeneland. So there's been four different avenues to get to Churchill to win this race.
Yes, it's been up in the and surprising to me, at least, is that we've seen Americans do so well at Churchill in it. You know, when I look at this, when I think of Mile and Three-Eighths, and from a few weeks back, I had something in the Racing Forum where I chatted and I spoke to Chad Brown about this. He's very much opposed to the race being at a Mile and Three-Eighths. He would have liked to have seen it at a Mile and an Eighth this year, with his reasoning being that all the leading preps are a mile and a quarter or shorter, you know, the major grade one races in America for fillies and mares. So it's very much, they're all trying something rather new here in terms of going a three-turn, three-mile and three-eighths race if they've been running in those elite grade one kind of races. Now you have some others, such as, say, Moms on Strike, who won the Bewitch. Well, I think that was a mile and a half, if I'm not mistaken, but point being, a three-turn kind of marathon. So it's a tricky race to handicap, and perhaps that's why we've seen a few surprises, because the form is limited at that distance, and you're having to weigh, okay, do I take the Stayer, maybe, the Moms on Strike, who isn't maybe of the same class, or do I take the classier type that's untested at that, you know, marathon distance? And then, you know, analyzing the Europeans, which is always a challenge, you know, for everybody. So it is a race that I think is fairly unique, that brings a lot of question marks for horse players when they analyze it on the day.
Well, and to further complicate the handicapping equation, those four winners, Perfect Sherrill, Perfect Sting, Ouija Board, and Shared Account, none of them won their prep, Byron.
Yeah, like I said, it has been and some of them paid some big numbers, if I recall.
Perfect Sherrill, $57. Yeah. That was the big one for Atfield.
And even it was Shared Account. Was she pretty big, too? I want to say she was off the top of my head. Going back a few years, you know, so.
Let me see. Shared Account. I'll tell you right away. Hold on. Shared Account paid.
She was 20-1 or something.
No. She, holy cow. I forgot that. She was 46-1.
Ah, okay.
She was the second longest shot on the board.
Changed her. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, that's tricky. So, like I said, that would be a race, I think, historically speaking, that is a good spread race for the gimmick player, you know. And I think part of it is the fact that, you know, we don't have that established kind of pecking order in these kinds of races just yet, you know. So Shared Account was fifth in the Flower Bowl before her win, so that was no doubt an odds builder. And she was a horse that didn't have that kind of three-turn experience. You know, the Flower Bowl, she had fated to be fifth in that race, but she had primarily been a mile and an eighth kind of performer over her career. So there you go. That's your chaos race.
Interesting. And the funny thing is, you know, I think if you ask people generally, just, you know, thinking about the Ouija boards of the world and you know, horses like Islington and some of the other good ones, you would think that this wouldn't necessarily be as productive from a price standpoint. I can remember that the one that I know hurt me at Monmouth that year on the soft turf. Kieran McLaughlin had that pop up winner, La Hadood, that paid $25. And that was another price. But there's also been midday at Oak Tree, going back to 2009, was a shorter price. Soaring Softly, 99, was there that day at Gulfstream. So it Banks Hill was 6-1, middle kind of a middle price for Starine. For Bobby Frankel, of course, and that was 13-1, paid $28.40. Frankel ran 1-2 that year. Banks Hill was second that year. I forgot that, and Frankel won with the horse that he owned.
Yeah, Frankel was a man. He was a training son of a gun, wasn't he? He pulled off some amazing feats, and he had another winner. I think this one won at a mile and a quarter. It had come off of the win and the first lady at a mile, and he stretched her out, I think she wired him, if I'm not mistaken. I'm blanking on her, but again.
Oh, Intercontinental, you're thinking
Intercontinental,
of.
Intercontinental, yeah. He was, man, his achievements in this race and just over his career were pretty remarkable.
Let's look at some of the names. And Wild Illusion, of course, comes rolling right out of that Prix d'Opera win at Longchamp going back a week ago Sunday. And Charlie Appleby brings her forward. You know, the interesting name that you added this week was Homeric for Frances Grifford, that was third in there. And she also held her own against Lawrence. What's your feel? Lawrence more heading toward the mile, it looks like, than the filly and mare turf.
And even that, I know my colleague Marcus Hirsch spoke to the trainer, Mr. Burke, and who had said that the Breeders' Cup is still in play, although she is set to run this weekend in on British Champions Day. So obviously you have a 2-week turnaround there, which is kind of not ideal. It's not anything crazy for these Europeans. Sometimes they'll pull it off at the end of the year. It was not long ago, just Queen's Trust a couple years ago won this race, wheeling back out of that. So she's a possibility. They don't have a lot of time to decide. The race is literally Saturday, and then on Monday pre-entries are due. So, they only got about a day and a half to kind of analyze how their horse comes out of a race to decide if they're going to put up the money and decide to pursue it. She's been kept more at a mile, Lawrence has, over this past, the fall of this year, which would lead me to believe that the filly and mare turf would be a little less likely, unless, and she is a versatile horse, unless they just view it as being an easier spot than the mile. Not that there's a whole lot of easy spots in the Breeders' Cup, but at this point, I guess hopefully we'll find out a little bit more after the weekend, but she has been pretty consistently raced this fall, so I also wouldn't throw it past them to say, this might just be the end of the season after Ascot, but who knows? The trainer was keeping very much his options open.
The other name that I want to get a feel for is Coronet, and Gosden could come over here and have just a mammoth day. And she comes out of the Yorkshire Oaks. She has faced off against really a steady parade of you know, the top fillies in Europe. And it feels like she may be, I don't know, like a fourth choice, fifth choice type, like a 6 to 8 to 1 in here. And a horse that I think people need to know more about.
Yeah, I mean, she's rock solid. She's kept some really good company. I mean, she raced with Sea of Class, who was a horse that was fast closing, nearly caught an Able in the Arc. I mean, just a really, really good filly.
Ran a tremendous race. I mean, if they run that race 10 times, she wins 5 of them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the kind of race where if you backed her, you were just like, yes. Sick. I mean, there's nothing worse than flying that fast at the finish and to fall just short. But just a really, really classy horse. And so for this horse to stay competitive with her, I think speaks of her talents. Obviously, as you mentioned, John Gosden, you know, you have a very elite trainer with proven Breeders' Cup success. I think you very much have to give her a lot of consideration in this race. And, and she's perhaps, you know, a touch fresher than some of these others, and certainly is a major player.
Got to bring up Dermot Weld. And Weld, for those that, only know a modest amount, when he comes to Breeders' Cup, when he comes to North America, period, it's always with a serious horse. He's not somebody that just fills up the entry box for fun, and he's been very selective over the years. And for that reason alone, the presence of Azira, who has been, it seems, intended for this race from fairly early on this year.
And she's really good. She's a horse that has won 4 of her last 5. Again, then I mentioned the name Sea of Class. That was the only loss she had, with a third behind her. So she's got really good form. In fact, just all around, the Europeans in this year's group are a very good, deep bunch. And I think in light of the limited U.S. numbers in the race and the fact that they are inexperienced at going and staying this distance, I'd have to think that this is a really ripe opportunity for a European in this particular field. And obviously, at the same time, you know, you can't really fault anything that Sister Charlie and Four Star Flick have done this year. They've been super consistent, top performing horses. But this is a good European cast.
It just so happens that this would only be the second Weld starter in the filly and mare turf. He brought over Dimitrova back in 2003, so it's been 15 years since he brought anybody for this race, and she did not run well. She kind of dropped anchor fairly early and ended up last under Pat Smulin, 12 to 1. That was Islington's win, and that's the last one. And in fact, I'm just trying to see, the last time he came at all was 6 years ago with Sense of Purpose for the Marathon. And so it's been 6 years since Dermot Weld even brought a starter over for the Breeders' Cup. But Azira has her name has been, you know, on the list from, I mean, the earliest part of the late summer when the list started to form. Magic Wand, we should mention too, Aidan O'Brien's starter that was actually very, very good late and loomed a winner or potential upsetter of Wild Illusion in that Prix d'Opera.
Yeah, I mean, we're potentially looking at the top three from the Prix d'Opera, which is quite a coup if they land all three from that, because that is a race that is one of the elite filly and mare turf races of the year, and also a mile and a quarter. So, you know, these are fillies that can stay. Again, I mean, we had some between the Prix L'Opera and the Arc. It was the European fillies were on display at Longchamp a week or so ago. So, and to land, if they can get all three of the top three finishers from the Prix de l'Opera, that's a very, very promising group.
The other name that I don't know a lot about yet is Princess Yaisa from Gavin Cromwell, coming out of the Prix de Royleau at Longchamp. What do we know about her? She won at 12 furlongs, so at least you know you've got a horse that the distance won't pose a problem.
I think she's widely deemed, at least as I, you know, was reading the various time form and racing posts, analyses and whatnot, that she's deemed it to be a little cut below the other ones in terms, I think, of from a class perspective. But as you mentioned, she is a stayer. So that's what she brings to the table, is that kind of proven ability to go the distance. And that would be her, you know, her appeal to someone that's going for her. She also seems to be an up-and-comer, but I don't believe she's as battle-tested as some of these others.
Well, the looking at the anti-post market in the UK, Wild Illusions basically 7-2, Sister Charlie 9-2, Coronet 8-1, Magic Wand about 8-1, and then at Four Star Crook 12-1. Zero 14-1. Shaker Rekka has turned up on the list too, off that E.P. Taylor win. How likely is Roger Varian to go forward?
I'm not quite certain on that one, because I have not seen. I threw her in the list because she was listed as a possible by Breeders' Cup officials, but a lot of times when you go in the E.P. Taylor, which is the race she just recently won, it's not a win and you're in. So you still got to pay up, and it's back on 3 weeks. So I would have to say she's you know, in that 50-50 kind of camp. You know, I don't think she has been firmly tossed into the mix just yet, but she is a possibility.
And finally, from the Euro potentials that have been kind of murmured, what about God Given? I haven't seen anything in weeks. This is Luca Kimani, of course, and I haven't seen any updates on God Given.
And nor have I. So, in fact, that's why she's not among our top 10 here. So she's a horse that whose name has been thrown out there as a possibility for the race, but at this point, it looks like others are looking a little more certain, or their connections have outwardly expressed that they, you know, they're pretty keen on the race. So she is a tricky read in terms of what to expect from her, if she'll be in there or not.
Yeah, there has not been anything in a month that I can find. So, all right, we'll see if we can't put the Euro feelers out and get any other updates. And with that, we will watch and see the next 10 days and get toward the pre-entries. And I appreciate this portion of the conversation. And Byron, how about a look ahead to tomorrow? You got the Sycamore, and there's some potential Breeders' Cup implications here, no? With Arklow, what's Brad Cox's thought process?
Well, my colleague Marty McGee spoke to him, and it's still very much on the table, but they just thought they'd run in here. I think it's an intriguing race in that you got pretty much a rematch of the Kentucky Cup, the big Kentucky Cup race. So I'm not so sure that he even has to win tomorrow, to be honest with you. I kind of took a chance against him. Certainly he's a contender, but I thought Arklow had a really nice trip when he won at Kentucky Downs. He was able to kind of tuck in and about toward the rear of the field, but there was quite a scrum right in front of him. And he was ninth passing the stands, and that was actually a preferred spot. It was, you know, the first three or four horses were in a good spot, and then right behind it, it was really a log jam. And then he was able to save ground for much of the race. And to his credit, he outkicked the other ones. But I just kind of thought that perhaps off that win, he'll be a touch over bet. So I went looking for, you know, some other contenders that might just offer a bit more value. I went with Oscar Nominated, who is a horse that was actually right in front of Arklow. And as I mentioned, there was some traffic. And it was just a little bit of jostling. Having been down there that day, it was a little more noticeable as it passed us, right in front of the little press area. You could actually hear the jockeys kind of hollering as things were tightening up. And Oscar Nominated was kind of a part of that. And then afterwards, he just kind of seemed like he went through the motions. He went ran fifth thereafter, just kind of stayed steady. I didn't think it wasn't like one of these troubled trips where you say, oh, he absolutely should have won or anything like that. I just kind of think maybe it just discouraged him, and he just kind of just didn't fully extend like he was capable. So I'm going to give him another try. I thought he ran a really fine race in the spring at Keeneland when he was second in the Elkhorn behind One Go All Go, and ahead of It's in the Post, who's a rock-solid horse. So I just think he, my true mile and a half horse, a little bit of an odds improving run after going unplaced last out. So I like Oscar Nominated.
You've also got the presence of Bigger Picture in here, and Maker is also, I know, considering a cup run for him in the turf. So keep an eye on a Bigger Picture. The horse that might be a decent price. I printed this out before the morning lines, and I haven't looked at the quick sheet, Byron. Cuptado, the Argentinian for Tom Morley, coming out of that
20 to 1.
That 20 to 1.
20 to 1. Yeah, 20 to 1.
Well, 20 to 1's a little nutty. 20 to 1's a number worth, boy, if he's half that, he's worth looking at. Cuptado is going to save tons of ground, and I absolutely will play him at that price. Hello, Don Julio came back and won again for Mike Dilger the other day, and Cuptado ran a terrific race, you know, off the brief summer freshening. Cuptado for me, thank you. Thanks for that number.
Yeah, well, you know, he was just looking at the odds on him. Boy, he does not get a lot of love at the windows. He was 115 to 1 when he was second in the Laurel Turf Cup. Before that, he was 98 to 1 in the Belmont Gold Cup. But 115 to 1 when he was second at Hello Don Julio. Wow. It's not every day you see him over 99 to 1 like that.
No, I'm glad we looked at that. I just pulled up. Wow, 20 to 1. It is Soman TMA for McPeak too. Down inside is a big price, 30 to 1. This is a nice board. 13 McPeak bookending the field actually too, with Harlan Strong outposted. McPeak running a pair of 30 to 1s. And a big field for tomorrow's Sycamore. There's also a couple of good-looking maiden races on that card tomorrow. Today, kind of a humdrum Wednesday 8-race card. But then Thursday and Friday, including the Valley View Friday, Byron, leading into the weekend, looking pretty good.
Yes, I mean, they got a really good field for the Valley View. I have not had a chance to handicap it yet, other than seeing the the major entries, but I mean, they got, you know, full field. They have Daddy is a Legend in there, who was scratched from the right. Queen Elizabeth in favor of this spot, and certainly you have to think that she's got a really strong chance. And this is a filly that's already won over the Keeneland course. Was run actually in defeat when she was unplaced in the spring, was also a fine effort too. She's just a very, very nice horse who seems to be at her best when she, you know, if she, last time she caught a little bit of soft turf in the Lake Placid and could not keep up with rushing fall, but her other runs have all been consistently good. And then you also have a prominent European that's coming in, Poetic Charm, Charlie Appleby. He's already done very well with his Invaders, and so this is a horse that's Group 3 placed overseas, just won a little stake, the Dolphin, a really nice group, and Chipolata for West Point Thoroughbreds, Christophe Clement was third in the Belmont Oaks, grade one and her only start in the country, so a really nice group. I think this race has always done well over the years in terms of drawing a nice group for $150,000. I think in part because there's only so many spots and availability to run against the really elite ones in the, you know, the QE2, the Queen Elizabeth. And at this time of year, you start having fewer and fewer options to stay in your age group, and this
sure
represents that as a, you know, a graded race for three-year-old fillies. There's only, you know, a sprinkling of major ones left over the remainder of the year.
Well, a week plus left for Keeneland, and action picks up today, 1 o'clock, 1:05, and Byron King and Marty McGee continue to keep tabs for you, and with a little Hegarty. Hegarty's always got his finger in the Keeneland pie.
He does, and he also knows all the business workings of amazing. His coverage of, I always think back to the Breeders' Cup from years ago when those guys, you know, tried to cheat the pick six system and all that, and Hegarty's reporting of that I felt was so far superior to anybody else's. He just made it, he simplified it in a way that made it easy to understand and interesting, and Matt does a top first-class job.
No doubt, and not afraid to send it in at the windows either, which garners the respect of the playing community as well as those that are stakeholders and follow the hard news, and Matt does it all. Byron King, of course, you can follow on Twitter, DRF Byron King. And Byron, looking forward to seeing you in your spot at the Downs, and that's just, see you, what, about a week from Saturday I'll be in. So looking forward to that, and I appreciate this in-depth look at your division, the Filly and Mare Turf. Byron King, everybody. Thanks again.
My pleasure.
There he is, BK, Byron King. Let's take a break. Going to swing around to some Sire Watch Pedigree Focus conversation brought to you by Hill & Dale. Sid Fernando joins us next. Dr. Stephen Allday, Seth Merrow, and more. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get five full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for five of today's top tracks. Visit DRF.com/multitrack today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfertello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.